is mine.
My name is Yuri Lowenthal.
My name is Travis Sintel.
And you are, for a bit longer, awaited.
We'll get there eventually. You Are Awaited, Yuri, is a Mad Max Fury Road podcast where Travis Sintel, me, and thank you, and Yuri Lowenthal, you.
Mm-hmm. That's me.
We sit and we watch 4 minutes at a time of the film Mad Max Fury Road, and we discuss it, and we break it down, and we talk about our reactions, our emotional connections to it, our thoughts, feelings, and ideas about the world, all filtered through a mad lens.
Love it.
Great.
I love you.
You know what? I love you too. I always thought, certainly by the time this podcast came to the end of the film, I would have come up with a intro that was consistent.
No.
But that would have required thought, effort.
I always thought that I would come up with one and surprise you.
Yeah, did that happen?
No.
Well, it's episode 46 of 52. We have a little bit of time left to do that. Thank you all for tuning in again this week. We're happy to have you. Welcome to our man cave of excitement and mattery.
This is going to be a bit of a free-flowing episode because we didn't know exactly how to cover this last bit because it was just another minute.
There was a minute of film. We're going to talk about that. We have a quote to get through, and then we're going to talk about some of the top above-the-line credits on the film because that's where we got through.
Right.
This is minute, for those of you following along, minutes 152 through 156. 1 hour 52 through 1 hour 56. One more episode of credits after this, content-wise, so to speak. Mm-hmm. This is the last visual content of the film we'll cover today. Do not despair, listeners. Do not cry. Be hopeful.
Like Yuri's doing.
Yuri,
right now.
Yeah, but there'll be more. Yuri, stop it. Yuri, stop it.
They can't
it.
See me, so I'm not crying.
Yuri, you're above this. You're strong. You're
a strong man who needs to show his emotions.
You're a cloud member of Diaper Panther. You will not. You will not behave this way.
Okay.
Clan Nurse Tiger spits in your face. We never got our sigils made up, sadly.
No, we didn't. Coat of arms. We need coat
Although,
of arms.
Although, I will, next episode, tweet out the picture of my face as a cat on a man's back.
Fuck yes.
You guys
if
deserve
we
it.
Have gained anything by doing this podcast, it'll be the glory that is that tattoo, or at least it in my head.
What if this whole thing was a year-long method of gathering followers to revel in the tattoo goodness of this man's back?
I'd be okay with that.
Yeah, there's worse ways to spend your time.
Goddamn right.
Like voting, you American asshole. Sorry. It's going to linger for a while, guys. It may linger through the end of the podcast. My simmering resentment towards the way our voting system sort of displayed itself recently.
You know, I know we were both mostly in agreement on Force Awakens, and we're even more so, I think, in this case.
We're even more soft.
Even more soft. Mediocre more soft.
You guys, have we descended to in jokes and just self-reference at this point?
Is doesn't this matter. The in jokes are for all of us.
It's
I
true.
Mean, they,
also,
they were here the whole time.
Yeah. No. Again, I've said it before. No one starts on episode 46 of a podcast where we go through a film minute by minute. You got to come in at the beginning. So you guys
so.
Know what's up. You guys have been listening, and thank you for that. You actually, man, I'm going to get maudlin now, but you guys have made this year really good for us, I think.
Yeah.
I'm not doing wrap-up stuff yet for the podcast. But
no,
just as
no,
because
we'll get to that, and we'll still, there are things to get to beyond the end of this film as far as episodes go.
The sheer aggression with which
you guys... So stick around. We will try to, we have done a good job of not breaking 1 week in 45 weeks.
46 now.
We've now 46 now. We have not had a week off where there was not content. I'm hoping to continue that. At least through 52 episodes. If there is a drop in a week, it's only maybe because we're waiting on a guest or something like that. If we drop a week here or there,
stay tuned, jerks.
Yeah, just keep it on your keep the podcast on your list on your feed. You know the subscription, because as new stuff comes up, we'll just do it.
True story.
Just talk about it.
Yuri's not lying. Yuri is the kinder, gentler half of us who is kind and gentle and sweet.
I'm the kinder, gentler one.
Oh, come on, Yuri.
Does that mean that I'm going to die first in the new regime?
Yes.
Okay.
You're the soft underbelly of America. I'm the fucking hardened
so
dick relic.
True.
That's what I am. I'm a feral, gigantic man cub. I wish that would have come out differently. Let's get through the 4 minutes and let's talk about a couple things, and we can do some wrap up stuff at the end of this particular episode.
So let's talk about this. I mean, it is essentially one last moment.
It is. It's one last little sequence that we have to go through here.
Mm-hmm.
No less beautiful and no less filled with character wrap ups and things.
Mm-hmm.
But we pick up where we left off with the platform being raised up to Valhalla, so to speak. Our characters ascending to their destinies, to their new homes, to the green place, the place they've all wanted to go. We have Furiosa, supported by two of the wives, and she's still broken but hopeful. We now know she's going to survive, we have to assume. Behind her, at the top of the sequence, we see Max.
We see the guy with the warty nose.
Yeah, we see your favorite warty nose guy.
And a bunch of people, other people who had clambered onto the lift.
And actually, there's this beautiful shot that I think is, again, non-verbally handled so perfectly, where we cut from the shot of the water cascading onto the masses released by the milkmaids, and we cut then to Mad Max looking at that image and being really touched by it, I think. And we see it through his eyes. This movie is a constant series of motivated perspectives, as we've talked about before, but we're asked to engage with that image through Max's perspective here. Filmmaking is so clever. Like, the medium of film is so neat.
If it's done right.
It can ask you to look at something so little. Through someone else's eyes. Just by doing a certain kind of shot. It's really great.
And the way his handsome face fills the frame, it is a good shot of him. It is a good shot of him.
What? Yuri, during this minute segment, kind of murmured to himself, "He looks so good there."
Was it to myself?
I hope. I don't know why you're telling me that.
Okay.
And Yuri is leaning back in this, like, I'm just sort of
relaxed into the couch, just thinking of Tom Hardy's.
You know how in theater they tell you to lead with a part of your body? You can define characters by, does he lead with his head? Does he walk with his chest? Does he, you know, you've heard that before.
I'm leading with my dick
relic. You're leading with your dick so hard right now. That's really weird. You're practically thrusting.
My dick relic.
Oh, God, Yuri. No, he does look good, though. You're right. It's a very in-focus shot of Tom Hardy.
Yeah. And that is something that's done several times in this last little sequence. What's in the center of the frame is hard in focus, and sometimes the rest outside is softened, so it pushes your eye even more towards the center of the frame and what's right there.
Good depth of field, guys. Nice work.
Because as it's going, they're all going up, and it's triumphant music, and then at one point, Furiosa looks over her shoulder to maybe say something to Max, or to, you know, maybe high five him.
Like, that would have been. We did it.
Yeah. Do another one of those handshakes, the Predator handshakes.
That was the best one.
It makes me never want to let go of you.
That was the best one we've ever done. Holding hands, guys.
We're still holding hands. Let's hold hands throughout the rest of the.
All right. Never let go.
So never let go. So she turns and he's gone.
Because he's fucking Mad Max. He can just jump off a platform that's moving. He doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah. And she looks for him, and she sees him down on the ground.
You talk about this moment. It's one of your favorites. You brought it up many times. The history of this moment, how it happened, all that stuff.
I do love this moment. I cannot guarantee that any of these stories that I've heard about this moment are necessarily true.
Tell it, because if there's one thing this podcast does, is it traffics in bullshit and rumors. So let's do that.
Okay, great.
Well, tell us the thing that you heard once that may or may not be true.
Are you saying we're the Breitbart of podcasts?
Yep.
Okay, great. So we see Max down among the unwashed mess. He's not riding up with them. And in a moment, she's confused. She's searching for him. She finds him down there. Another beautiful moment of him being, you know, very in focus down there, and the people sort of swirling around him less so. Or maybe that was just in my head.
Right.
There's no, I mean, it is, you know, a moment without dialogue. You know, we don't have her say, "Why are you down there? Where are you going? Come back." And he's like, "No, I gotta go. I'm Mad Max.
I have an appointment with the bullet farmers.
It's, you know, this, that, the other. It's, I'm the guy."
Did you make him Jewish? I'm Mad Max. I got things to do.
They just share a look.
She gets it.
She
immediately gets it.
Right.
Those guys weren't going to fuck.
No, no. Now, we've been told a story, true or not, that...
First of all, we haven't been told us. No one's told us this story.
Okay.
Right? Has someone told you from the movie?
Didn't... I'm trying to... You know, it all runs
GVB.
Together.
Didn't GVB say... Maybe he did.
Or maybe Mark Sexton.
I think Yuri's right, and I think I have to apologize to him, because I think we actually were told this.
I think we were told that the original idea.
This.
Yeah. was that Max, in an original draft or original version or original thought, was that Max rides up with them, and that's the end of the movie.
I think,
yes. And I want to say that the story that we heard was that Tom Hardy said he wouldn't do that. He said Max would not. He wouldn't go up there with them.
Yeah.
He's not comfortable with that.
It's correct.
It's, yeah. And so they changed. I think it's a much better moment. Now, our friend Travis Stevens,
yeah.
His idea, you know, early on, Travis was 14. A guest. 14.
I just made that up.
Let's say it's 14. But Travis came on and said his theory on that is that Max knows that inside of a month, it's all going to fall apart. Like, there's no way that they can turn this into the...
I disagree with that assessment.
Okay, okay. But let me finish, and then I want you to... Let me know what you think. That he's leaving because he knows that this is not the solution, and this is not going to be a safe place. It's bound for not the glorious end that they're looking for. It's not going to be a return to the green place. Mm-hmm. And so he's moving on. He's like, see ya. So that was also a thought as to why he was walking away. But talk to me about why you don't like it. Just because you don't like, because you'd rather have a...
Here's the thing. It's imposing our assumptions onto the story. And the story's told us something different. The story's told us this is a hopeful ending. Mm-hmm. Maybe one we don't deserve. But to insinuate that Max, after having come through, as our last episode discussed, a reclamation of hope, mm-hmm. a reclamation of self, and a reclamation of his future, is then going to make a pragmatic decision based on some sort of, the way he thinks things might go. If anything, this character is as hopeful in this moment as he's ever been in this whole mm-hmm. life that we've seen him mm-hmm. after his wife got killed.
Right.
And to say, like, well, just making a pragmatic decision feels like imposing our external desires or what we would do on a situation when I think the movie, the story we're being told is something very different.
I agree.
So that's all.
I agree. I love it.
I think he's leaving because it's the right thing to do in terms of that's not his home. That's mm-hmm. their home. He doesn't mm-hmm. want to help rule. He mm-hmm. doesn't want to help govern. He is not meant to be there. He's not one of them. Mm-hmm. It's not where he belongs. So I think it's about belonging more than mm-hmm. it is about, well, it's probably going to fall down in a month and I should get out of here now while I have the chance. Because if that was the case, he would go for a couple days, drink some water, eat some food, hang out, recuperate, then leave.
But he leaves immediately.
Yeah, that's what I think lends credence to our theory, not Travis Stevens. Mm-hmm. Bless you, Travis Stevens. I love you. But if that theory's true, mm-hmm. and he's being purely pragmatic, the pragmatic thing to do is to stay, recover, drink some water, eat some food, get some supplies, and then go.
Yeah.
That's pragmatic.
Right.
It's not a pragmatic decision. He's going because he doesn't belong there, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Do you buy that?
Well, it is then followed with a quote, and we don't have to leave this moment.
Yeah, please.
But where must we go, we who wander this wasteland in search of our better selves? The first history man, which I... just assumed was the first history man. I assumed was some sort of Australian text that I'm just not familiar with, or an Aboriginal text, or something. In the very little research that I've done, it is George Miller made that up.
That feels right to me.
To put this point on the.
I felt that too. Mm-hmm. I felt my instinct was I would have guessed it was fake, but I also wouldn't have been surprised if it was real. I just tipped towards probably made up. But mm-hmm. this is the closer again. Let's repeat it. Where must we go? We who wander this wasteland in search of our better selves. That feels nicely ambiguous and also very specifically targeted.
So do you think it says that Max doesn't feel like he's earned this yet, like he has earned the better self that he thinks he can still be? He's still got to go soul searching, and he's not going to find it here because it's about to get too comfortable? Or is he uncomfortable here?
Yeah, I think all those things are true.
Yeah.
I think it's a deliciously ambiguous quote that also feels targeted toward Max's decision to leave, and also the fact that some of these people have found their better selves in a spot. You know, mm-hmm. so the wives in Furiosa have found their green place.
Right.
We're told that, very specifically textually. Mm-hmm. Max didn't find his better self there, but mm-hmm. he found the start of it on this journey, and we saw him mm-hmm. find hope, and we saw him find the beginnings of recovery and reclamation of himself. And he's going to look for more of that, I think. You know, so I think that mm-hmm. Max's journey isn't done, which makes sense for the series. Mm-hmm. The girls' journeys are done. They've right. looked. They found the green place. That mm-hmm. was Furiosa's desire and goal in this film was to rescue the women from their sex slavery and right. to find the green place.
Right.
They're at the green place. The women are now free. She right. has. She's finished her journey. I think. Mm-hmm. Max's journey isn't over. Mm-hmm. It's the start. I mean, this is what I mean to say. The end of this film is the start of Max's discovery of self change. Mm-hmm. The moment he says his name and gives of his lifeblood to save mm-hmm. Furiosa is the beginning of his change, not the end.
Also, in once going back to, again to where George Miller repeats things in his films mm-hmm. because he likes to hit them from a different angle, this is, I think, somebody telling the story of Max. Mm-hmm. This is mm-hmm. in the I forget in Mad Max what the moment that it ends on, but in Road Warrior it ends with the feral kid growing up telling the story. In Beyond Thunderdome, for better or for worse, it ends with them in that bombed out building.
I mean, for worse.
For the worse. Yeah, not even for better.
Don't front.
You know, the kid's telling the story of this guy and this world and what happened. And this film doesn't justify that afterthought moment of showing some people telling the thing.
Absolutely.
But I think George Miller wanted to leave that again, to drop that. But, you know, the tale of this guy, Mad Max, will go on. And here is the question they ask themselves that maybe Furiosa and, you know, once they get up there and everybody's like, well, where did Max go? You know, I'm sure that was a question that came up from, you know, all the wives in the Vivellini. And, you know, even if he was a recent addition to their lives, he was an important addition. He was, you know, a man who came in to help them.
Yeah.
And I'm sure a lot of thought, you know, from them went into where did he go? Will we ever see him again?
Yeah.
We have to, you know, tell the story of these men that we met who were good people.
You nailed it, man. No, that's it. I hadn't thought about it that way. You've absolutely
This is all coming to me as we're.
No, you've nailed it. You're nailing it. It's. I hadn't thought about it that way. It's reclaiming the mythic structure of the story, mm-hmm. and you can't just end with that. And the way it ends, by the way, and we're bouncing around. I'm sorry, but mm-hmm. the last shot is holding on the underside of the platform as it raises up.
That's a great wipe.
It's such a great wipe. It's a natural
smart,
wipe,
like from a cinema.
And what you do is, because Furiosa is closest to the edge, one by one, you lose sight of all of our main characters. You lose sight, let me try this, you lose sight of Cheeto, you lose sight of Capable, you lose sight of the Dag, you lose sight of Toast the Knowing, and then you lose sight of Furiosa.
Yep.
Did I fucking nail that? God damn it. I know the names of the characters, guys. Episode 46.
I think you got it.
I wasn't confident. I'm happy it landed well.
And the drums at the end and then into the quote. Plus, you know, from a practical standpoint, it allows us to take Max wherever we want next time.
Yeah. I mean, it's one.
If he stayed there, I think there would be some sort of onus on, you know, the next film
up there.
To at least explain what happened at the end of, and now we don't have to because he's gone.
Yeah.
He's on his own thing.
It makes sense from a fiscal narrative
right.
perspective, but also from just a storytelling perspective. And I think that mm-hmm. you're right, that this is the end of this myth. This chapter of the myth, this chapter yeah. of the Mad Max saga, ends with this quote, putting this all in perspective mm. and reminding us that this is just a story, this is a big mythic structure. That's absolutely what it is.
I've always been the first history man. I feel like the first history of man, it should be.
Super
or
weird,
or
yeah.
is it the first history man? Like, is Max the history man?
Yeah.
I mean,
it's very clunky language.
It's weird.
Yeah, I think the latter is probably right.
Clearly, it's got to be on purpose.
Yeah, can you imagine if that was a typo?
Yeah, we left out the O!
Oh, guys, who did this? Who invented this quote? Right. What are you doing? No, I think you're right. I think the first history
first
man.
First history man, yeah, the first history man. I don't know.
I don't know what it means. It feels good.
The first history, comma, man.
Man, dude, the first history.
History dude.
Dude. No, I think it feels intentionally mythic. I mean, sometimes subverting connecting words and things like that can make it feel more mythic. And I think the first history man is maybe like the whatever. I have nothing smart to say about it. It just feels
it felt weird. Yeah,
Yoda-esque.
Yeah.
In terms of the closing moment, we did get a nice shot of the platform rising up. We get a last look at all of our main characters. They seem resolute, resourceful. Mm-hmm. We have a nice shot of Capable looking out. She's the one that the film highlights as one of the wives to focus on. She looks out of the distance while Furiosa is looking for Max. We get a nice shot of Capable, like, looking.
The dag is still sort of nervous, chewing her nails like she does throughout a lot of the film.
And Zoe Kravitz is doing some sort of like leg forward, like Superman pose, because no one told her what fucking movie she was in.
Right.
She like, just show up and look cool.
She was in that X-Men movie, so maybe she thought she was.
Who was she in the X-Men movie?
She was in X-Men First Class, I think. Or the one after X-Men First Class. I don't know. She was a character.
Okay.
I
did not notice her, which is unsurprising, I feel.
Yeah, fair enough.
We have to wrap it up with some sort of hatred of. Sorry, I honestly don't hate. I'm so sorry, but again, in the scene, all the wives are doing a thing that makes sense to them, and I don't know what the fuck she's doing. So, just want to say that. Also, importantly, I think we don't get a torn from limbs overthrow of Corpus Colossus, which I think is the right move.
Yeah,
we get the implication that he's going to go along with this.
Right,
he didn't
he's got
do anything really wrong. He didn't hurt anybody. Like the war boys don't hurt him. They look at him. In the previous sequence, and he's like, "Ooh, boy, so we are in a situation now, boys. I don't know what happens next, but
it can't be. I mean, in that last moment, it can't be a violent overthrow. Otherwise, it's right back to square one.
Exactly, it's a peaceful transition of power, which is a phrase we've heard a lot over the last 2 to 3 weeks, guys.
Yeah.
Which is something we're going to try for January 21st, 22nd. And America, as there is a peaceful transition of power from democracy to authoritarianism. Sorry.
Well, I would have just gone straight to fascism.
Okay, well, being kind. Being gentle about it.
You are a kinder, gentler version of me.
Anything else? Right. I wish that was true. In terms of the sequence, is there anything else I'm leaving out before we move on to credit talk?
I think we sort of decided on the fly that what we would do is we would sort of, with you guys for the next little bit, because that was only a minute and 20 seconds or something that we would play through to the end of the 4 minutes, stopping occasionally on credits that pop up.
Yeah, let's do that. Before we do that, do you feel emotionally cathartic about the end of the film? Let's talk about the end of the film for a second. Is this an appropriate emotional catharsis?
Yes, for me, yes. I absolutely had that.
Yeah.
I would have had a nice emotional catharsis if they ended with Max going up on the lift with them. I had an even better one with him walking away at the end.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the right... Yeah, I hadn't thought about this all the way through, but I feel like having him walk away and letting us linger on Furiosa as the final image...
Mm-hmm. They both nod at each other, too. That's a thing that happens. He nods.
She nods.
I don't know if it's a, you got this. You don't need me to stick around.
Yeah.
Go do the thing. You're home. You've got your redemption. Your green place, go and build a better thing. And then she nods back, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a lot. I mean, again, nonverbal is the right way here because a nod can mean many things. But it's also thanks for what you did.
Yeah.
And she's like, thanks, thank you.
They saved each other.
Yeah, there's all this stuff in that nod that's encompassed and it's beautiful and it's the right move and it's the right amount of acting and it's the right moment.
Do you think there's any, in either of those looks or both of those looks, do you think there's any, I wish I could stay?
No, I don't see it.
And or I wish you could stay?
I don't see it.
Okay.
I think it's thanks for what you did, thanks for what you did, good luck, I know why you're leaving, you know why I'm leaving. I think it's all that feels like the moment they're playing. I assume that's what the actors are playing. I don't see regret.
If this was The Force Awakens, as he's about to get off the platform, she would have turned, and he would have stopped, maybe even hanging off the platform. And she would have said, why are you going?
I have to go. I can't stay. Yeah.
But we need you. No, you don't. You've got this.
That's right.
There would be all that. And then he would drop down into the...
Yeah.
And she would reach out.
Yep. And her hand would linger.
Right.
And she'd slowly pull it back and a single tear would come down her face and the music would swell. Mm-hmm. And then someone would say something illogical.
Right.
And that didn't make any sense.
Yeah. Somebody would... One of the wives would turn to her and say... Who was that masked man?
Yeah. And then Tosa knowing would say, does anyone want some oatmeal? He'd be like, what the fuck is going on? Yeah, all right. No, I do feel like this is a proper emotional catharsis. Importantly for a film like this, it feels like the end of a story. It feels like an end of the end of a myth. The women rising up, you know, we've been told the whole movie, the goal is to go to Valhalla, the goal is to ascend, he'll carry me to the gates of Valhalla himself, and here they are, women rising up. And yeah. importantly, the last shot, the last five characters we see in the film, six characters we see in the film are all women.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Yeah.
Oh, we didn't talk about one other thing in the sequence. We get a beautiful shot supporting what Yuri said last episode of from below the masses up towards the water, and we see them rejoicing, cheering, collecting the
right,
water,
right.
and their homemade buckets. And we
everybody's got a thing to catch water.
Yeah, we got better. We have better shots of the backs, what they're carrying. We have this triumphant joy. We have, and this is, hey man, you know what? Listen to this. This is cool.
Talk to me. Tell me about it, Stud.
Let me just Greece.
Thank you.
the image of if you want to catch water. Or you want to cheer and rejoice, your body position is the same.
Yeah.
And that feels important and interesting to me.
You're lifting up your arms.
Because some
too,
people yeah. are lifting up buckets, some people are just raising their arms up, and they look right. the same. And that's mm-hmm. a really neat image, I think.
Yeah.
Just wanted to say that.
Everything supports, yeah.
It's a cool image, it's a cool idea that some people are like, the tyranny is over, rejoice. I'm raising my arms for those of you who can't see me, which is everyone
He's
but Yuri.
Absolutely.
We did it. We overthrew the tyranny. We're now a free people. And some people are like, water. And other people are like, water, and we're free. It's yeah. this nice little closing image of wrapping up the people, the sense of hope for this downtrodden, fucked up people who had mm-hmm. a shitty life.
Mm-hmm.
At least in this moment, they all seem happy.
Yep.
So, you know, of course, life gets shitty again after this for them, probably in some discernible way. But in this moment, we leave them happy, which yeah. again is how a myth ends.
Right.
You don't follow Jason and the Argonauts past the conclusion. That's the right. end of it. You right. know, on that moment, they're happy and right. and our movie's over. So I feel like that's what we have here is we have a moment where all the good guys and or people who just aren't bad guys
mm-hmm.
have a happy ending.
Mm-hmm.
And for a movie like this, which is so relentlessly bleak and dystopian, to have a moment of actual joy and to leave all our characters in a better place is incredible.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's anything left to say.
I just wanted to say that. I just wanted to say that thing. So I said it. I wanted to, and
you
I said it.
Did a great job at saying
because
it.
It's our podcast. We can say whatever the fuck we wanna. All right, let's go through a couple credits here. Unless there's something else you want to go through.
Yeah, no.
All right, and this will. That's our general wrap up of the film. We're gonna do probably a more holistic movie through wrap up.
Directed by George Miller.
Sure, we've heard of him. Let's talk, okay, so.
Okay, so written by.
Here's the thing about the writing credits. Writing credits, George Miller, Brendan McCarthy, and Nico...
Lathouris.
We've heard a lot about the top two guys. Mm-hmm. Brendan McCarthy's gotten a lot of shout-outs on our podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't follow Brendan McCarthy on Twitter, BTW, mm-hmm. sort your lives out.
Right.
Go follow him. He's been tweeting
a lot.
Loads of rad behind-the-scenes Mad Max stuff, storyboards, character descriptions.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
We follow him at You Are Awaited, so follow mm-hmm. us while you're at it.
Right.
But
I think he's just at Brendan McCarthy. I think he's just at Brendan McCarthy. He might be.
Anyway, great
stuff.
Anyway,
yeah, you can always catch him off of our... If you go to our feed.
Deep knowledge about the film that we don't have.
I would love to find out more about Nico Lathouris.
Who is that person? His name hasn't come up a lot.
Right. When did he come into the process? How? Because, yeah, you're right. We hear a lot about George Miller and Brendan McCarthy, but not about Nico Lathouris.
So we have homework to do. Who the fuck is Nico Lathouris?
Homework.
Well,
we've never had to do homework for
I know we won't do it,
show.
But I'm just saying that we should. Like, that's my way of acknowledging we should look him up.
That's like when I first started, recently started, you know, I've had that, the art and design of Mad Max. That book, that beautiful book.
Yeah.
I've had it since the day it came out.
Yes.
And I have just not read through it. And now that I've started to read through it, I'm embarrassed because all of these things that we talk about, or many things in our podcast, I'm like, well, there's the answer to that question right here in this book.
You guys, we tried. Listen, we did our best.
We might do an episode of the things we learned about that from reading that book.
Yeah, that'd be good. So Nico Lathouris, check him out.
Check him out. We don't know who he is.
This is an interesting podcast.
Produced by people.
This idea sucks. This is a bad idea.
This is probably a bad idea.
All right.
Okay, produced by,
let
you
it,
guys
let,
get
let
it. They made the film happen.
Can you put it on mute and then...
Why would we put it on mute?
So people can hear us when we talk about it?
But don't we need to stop it with each one or no?
Well, I was going to let it run. I don't know what to do right now. But I had higher hopes for this than is actually manifesting. Anyway, John Seale did the director of photography.
John Seale's director of photography, obviously.
He's super
amazing
rad.
Work. Margaret Sixel.
Maggie Sixel,
who Tom Hulkenberg, aka Junkie XL, we knew that.
Colin Gibson
would
right,
love to
right
have
here.
See, I told you we were gonna have to stop.
Yeah, because here's the thing. I just want to say
so fast.
But I just want to say this: we didn't prep for this. I didn't know. There's no. Here's the thing: in our defense, there's no good way to do this. I just want to give us a shout out because everyone that's come up so far, we've given shout outs to and talked about.
That's true.
Directly. So we've talked about Junkie XL, aka Tom Hulkenberg. We've talked about
Margaret Sixel,
Maggie Sixel with her fucking killer editing. Mm-hmm. Ginny Beaven did the costume design. We've talked about her also.
Colin Gibson, the designer. Yeah.
If you haven't watched Ginny's Oscar speech for costume design, check it out, because her speech is pretty awesome. What she wore to the Oscars is awesome.
Yeah, I know. It was a big fuck you to, like, anybody who's ever gone to the Oscars. It's like a bedazzled
denim jacket.
Yeah, so good. She's like, I'm from Australia, and fuck you guys.
Also, I won an Oscar for costume design, so you can't tell me I wore something weird.
Right, exactly.
This is the one place you can't tell me what I wore is wrong.
Genius.
I win.
That's almost as good as Mark Mangini saying, fucking Mad Max!
Fucking
at the Oscars,
Mad Max!
And getting censored.
Yeah, the sound guy getting censored. But I just want to, props to us for appropriately acknowledging a lot of the behind-the-scenes people in this film. Mm-hmm. We haven't acknowledged the... Actually, we have done some of those, too, so let's keep going.
Okay.
We've done a good job. These people deserve all the credit in the world. Hair and makeup, we have not talked about.
Fuck yeah, we have not, but things have come up.
Makeup's badass.
The scarification, we talk about the body makeup.
Yes. There's a shot we didn't talk about that we should talk about. One of the shots that closes the film is right before the end.
Yes, go ahead.
We get a shot from behind Furiosa where we see the Immortan symbol on her neck as she looks out over the crowds who are cheering. That's a beautiful shot.
That's true. That's totally a smart shot.
Like that shot where we see the brand of Immortan Joe still on her body as she looks out triumphant over the happy people he used to dominate and enslave. That's smart.
It's rebranding.
Rebranding!
Very nice. Very nice. Thank you. We did that together.
That was good. Rebranding.
All right. Hair and makeup designer Leslie Vanderwalt. Back to hair and makeup design. There's so much. I mean, we talk about the details of Max's hair and how it's fucked up from, he runs out in the middle of a haircut.
Yeah.
They don't go back to it.
I did that once. Never again. And no, it wasn't this last haircut, Yuri, since you're looking at my hair.
It's a very good haircut.
Shut up, Yuri.
Do you think maybe Leslie Vanderwalt said, look, you got to have the guy with the warty nose in at the end. I worked so hard.
That's his real face, dog.
What?
Yeah, dog.
That is not his real face.
I bet you it's his real face.
You think so?
Yeah.
Leslie Vanderwalt would know.
I put money on that.
Second unit director.
And supervising stunt coordinator. Also, there's a period at the end of these credits, which is really funny. Guy Norris. We did not talk about him as much. Obviously, stunts are awesome, but we don't know him.
Because we got a chance to meet Greg Van Borsum, so we were happy to just throw the
any
the
credit
spotlight
to
on him.
Anything in the film only goes to people who've come on our podcast.
Exactly.
So Greg Van Borsum gets all the credit for second unit directing and for supervising stunts. Sorry, Guy.
Sorry.
Unless you come on our podcast, in which case you're awesome, and we'll give you all the credit in the world for the amazing stunts.
Because if you have producers, they just gave a lot of money, right?
They
made the money happen.
Yeah.
Which is important, I will say, we do know that this film went through some times when Warner Brothers was like, we're not going to release this piece of shit.
Yeah.
And George Miller was like, oh, I guess I better save the film.
Yeah.
So actually, thank you to those people who probably came in.
Some of them came in at the end. Andrew Jackson, visual effects
president
supervisor.
President Andrew Jackson?
Well, he used to work with Alexander Hamilton on a lot of these effects, but one of them got killed and did not, in a duel, oddly enough, didn't live to see the end of the film.
Mm-hmm.
So, fact. Yeah. Well, Andrew Jackson has gotten a shout out on our two episodes ago. Mark Bowell shouts him out. So we have mentioned him also.
Yeah, because I know the film has gotten a lot of attention for not using a lot of visual effects, a lot of it's practical, but there was still a lot of work.
Tons of compositing,
to bring this film to you in the state that it's in.
And to see them... Oh, by the way, I meant to mention to you, I just watched The Thing, John Carpenter's The Thing again, and the practical effects in that movie.
Oh my God, it's one of those films that I watch every year.
Yeah.
And every year I expect it to finally be the year, and it doesn't. It only gets better.
If you guys haven't seen that, in terms of practical effects, there's nothing better. The guy who did it, 22 years old.
Really?
Yeah. He started working with Rick Baker when he was 14, and The Thing came out. He was the head of the department, did all the stuff himself with his department, and he was 22 years old. Anyway, go watch John Carpenter's The Thing, guys.
Visual effects supervisor, bloody Andrew Jackson.
Yeah. All right, now we're into
Okay, territory. Principal vehicle designer. So these are people that Greg Bau
shouted out.
Matt Bau.
Yep.
Talked about Peter Pound, vehicle designer, principal storyboard artist Mark Sexton.
Hey-o!
Big shout out and thanks to him for
Marky
coming on the show
Mark
and
being Sexton,
such
principal.
A huge yeah, such a huge proponent of the show and we love him madly.
It'll probably get
us into trouble someday.
Truly madly and deeply.
Concept designs Brandon McCarthy, who you know was also given a writing credit.
Again, a lot of these concept designs are coming out on Twitter right now, so please check them out. Yeah. He's leaking a lot of the stuff, the early imagination of the film.
Yeah,
and they're stunning. They're really interesting.
Look development
and supervising
colors. So that whole teal orange thing.
Credit
must have been
Eric Whip.
Eric Whip.
Whip.
Two piece.
Killed it.
Financial controller, don't know what that guy does.
Yeah. And now
Quick
we're into
supervisor.
Things, so I don't really
now we're into things that yeah, I you know re-recording mixers. So these are people that Mark Mangini probably would have talked about and/or worked
Jenkins
with.
Yeah, Greg Rudloff. They did get shoutouts on our episodes.
Yeah,
we've shouted out a lot of good people on our episodes. I'm feeling confident about this right now.
We have, right. And we needed 156. Is that our yeah? That's
yeah, our, but okay. Let's just go through a couple more names here.
Casting: Rona Kress, Nikki Barrett.
Good job. Well cast.
Yeah, well, yeah, like super.
They
well cast.
Probably found the Jamaican guy with the nose and the teeth. I think.
Entirely possible.
That's my theory.
I don't know. I think with as much screen time as he got, I think he was a friend of somebody or
no.
Something.
His face is the best. What are you talking about?
I know.
He's got the best. We disagree about this. You think someone did him a favor?
I think
he's got the badass ass face in the movie.
Fair enough.
That's my theory.
Okay. Now the casting. I'm trying to think of were there any American? Well, okay, Zoe Kravitz.
Yep.
But is she? Am I crazy? Is she?
She may be British.
Because isn't Lenny
British?
Kravitz British? I
actually don't know.
No, I think Lenny Kravitz is American.
American woman.
Yeah, that's my daughter Zoe.
Yeah.
So, wait, American actors. Because that's a that casting thing. So often, if you're shooting somewhere with a certain kind of money,
there's local, yeah.
You need to cast it for the most part, if not entirely, from a certain country or abroad.
I bet you these are Aussies. I bet you.
Yeah.
Well, CSA is an American organization.
Yeah, no, Rona Kress is not an Australian casting director, but she may have been tasked with having to cast abroad. Now, let's see, because the actress who plays Capable, she feels American.
Is that Riley Keough? Or is that someone else?
Yes, I think that's right. But Riley Keough doesn't sound like an American name to me.
No.
Because their accents are all
I think she's
place.
American. I think Riley Keough is American. But I'm not sure.
Okay. Well,
kudos to Travis for having a fact that may be true.
Yeah, Riley Keough. Good job.
Thanks, bro.
I couldn't have pulled that up.
No, thank you. All right, now we're into fucking
casting. Now we're into...
I don't necessarily feel need to go through these. Nicholas Holt, Hugh Keensburn. Hugh Keensburn maybe could have a second of shout-out.
I wish we could get him on the show. He's got such...
He seems like a badass.
He's got such a history, and he's like a real-life badass. I would love to just meet him.
Yeah, he's great. Nicholas Holt kills it. Great job. Actually, keep going. The Nicholas Holt in this versus in the X-Men series, it just shows his range. He's great.
Oh, yeah. And did you see him in, was it Warm Bodies? Or was it the zombie film he was in? Great.
Nah, yeah.
Great.
I heard he's great in that.
He's great. Josh Hellman, we've talked about
soon
him a
to be
lot.
Guest.
Nathan Jones, Rictus.
Killer.
You know,
used to work out at my gym.
Yeah.
Great.
There you go. Everybody's got a shout out.
Yep.
Zoe Kravitz,
it's the first credit of the wives.
You think it's because she's had more movies? She's done more movies?
No. I don't want to talk about it.
It was a negotiating thing. So here's going to be the first time for Travis.
Yeah.
That we get to pause on the names.
Aha.
The full names.
The splendid Angarad. What does Angarad mean?
No idea.
Great. Rosie Huntington Whiteley.
But splendid. I mean, he's clearly she was the favorite.
Yep, the splendid.
Toast the knowing. Not exactly sure what she knows, but she knows guns.
Yep, because she's as bland as toast.
She's practical. Wow.
Also full of gluten. I got her name right. Riley Keough, capable.
As capable.
Guys, I did it.
Abby Lee is your favorite.
Yep, and Courtney Eaton is Cheeto the Fragile. We've never
the
talked
fragile.
About that.
Right.
She is.
And yet that is, yeah.
Cheeto the Fragile.
But becomes Cheeto the Strong by the end of the film.
Up top.
One more time. Okay. Yep, we're moving on. Courtney Eaton, you can see her also in Gods of Egypt, along with Abby Lee.
Don't.
Do it. Do it.
Uh-huh.
John Howard.
Killer as the
Richard
peace leader.
Carter. And Iota is the Diff Warrior.
I mean, great. Obviously, fucking...
Yeah, other guests have talked about Richard Carter and John Howard, you know, on the show, and how they're well-known actors in Australia, and are so perfect for this. Iota, with a lowercase I, and capital O-T-A.
Just, if you have a name like that, you win.
Right.
That's all I have to say about Iota.
I want to get Iota on the show.
Yeah, same.
Oh. Angus Sampson, the Organic Mechanic. I'm telling you, and Jennifer Hagen is Miss Giddy. They share this lends credibility.
You're right.
This lends credibility.
We'll tweet this out.
Let to me my yeah.
This
yeah.
is Yuri's theory that the Organic Mechanic and Miss Giddy,
and Miss Giddy
up together.
Run off together. Here, let me kill
yeah.
the.
Yeah. Okay. This is Yuri's theory, guys. We missed last episode. Got it. That Miss Giddy and Organic Mechanic, the only two we don't have, the only two arguably
we don't have
main
closure
characters.
With. We don't see them
with.
Die. We don't see them live.
You're right. In fact. In all of the credits we've seen so far, all the major credits, everyone we've seen so far has a wrap-up, a character wrap-up, except for these two who share a title screen together.
I'm telling you.
You're right.
That's it. We could do a sitcom about those guys.
Yep, great. A sitcom.
And then we get to the Vovellini.
Let's go through their names, actually.
Okay.
The Valkyrie.
Megan Gale is the Valkyrie. I think she was the bait.
That's right. She is.
I believe.
Uh-huh. Keeper of the Seeds,
Melissa,
a.k.a. Old Boney.
Old Boney.
Yep.
Melissa Jaffer.
And then the other ones don't have names.
The other
Importantly,
ones, right.
This is interesting. The other ones don't have names, and we didn't really name them either. All we had
no,
names
we didn't.
For,
we just had that they were.
Old Boney was our favorite. Right. I like that we named the only one that had a name, except for the Valkyrie. Valkyrie.
Ugh. We'll get it. We'll get it. Okay. Well, you physically grabbed my hand to make sure we got it on that last one.
I wanted
one.
To. I was feeling good. The last three, really.
Melita Jurisic. Jurassic Park, Gillian Jones, or Gillian Jones, probably Gillian Jones, yep. and Joy Smithers.
Mm-hmm.
There are probably more on tap, ready. Yep. Antoinette Kellerman,
Christina Koch. There we go. Great, and then we're
okay,
into the rest
so
of
now we're into the rest of yeah, okay, great. Let's hang tight right here. Oh man, I missed it. The Ace.
These are important, actually. So
these
go back
are,
a little bit.
Let me go back a little
Let's
bit.
Let's just read you the names because these are actually relevant, I think. And okay. I was questioning the validity and value of this, but now I think it's good.
Okay. The Ace, John Iles. Do you even know who the Ace is?
No, and he's top credited here.
Top credited in this next.
Let's just go. Let me read a bunch of these to you because there's two I don't know.
Okay.
The Ace, Corpus Colossus, got that right. Mm-hmm. Glory of the Child, don't know who that is. I assume one of the war pups. I don't know.
Maybe one of the war pups.
Morsov,
yeah.
the Rock Rider Chief, the Prime Imperator.
Yeah.
Imperator. Chanting mm-hmm. War Boy, Bloodshed War Boy, War Rig mm-hmm. War Boy, Milking Mother. All those. I know who they are. Glory the Child and the Ace. I don't know who they are. So we should find that out.
Yeah. Corpus Clause is clear. Yeah. Glory the Child. Morsov. You know, we met Morsov.
Yep.
Rock Rider Chief.
The Prime Imperator is Ed Morton Joe's right hand man, I have to assume. The one who hisses at Furiosa at the end.
Right, yeah, let's assume that.
Yeah.
A couple of other Imperators.
Yeah.
Chanting War Boy could be.
Yeah, I get all these.
Yeah,
these
Bloodshed,
are just
War Rig. Milking Mother, Ripsaw Imperator,
Greg
our
Van
friend,
Borsum.
Greg Van Borsum.
He's the right hand man of the Bullet Farmer.
Yes.
That's the Imperator
for the
Bullet Farmer.
I think, yeah.
Yeah.
Because Red Flare Warrior comes out, he's the one, he's holding the flare up and, hold up a flare, I am! Yeah, okay. Polecat Lookout. So the guy who probably says, they're coming this way. But Black Mask must be the Alpha, what do we call him, the Alpha Cat?
Yes.
Among the Polecats. Black Mask, who was sort of the guy to stab Furiosa.
Yep. Shiv her.
To shiv her with her own shank. Or shank her with her own shiv.
Yep.
The Brakeman, again.
Greg Van Borsum again.
Greg Van Borsum. And the Winchman must be the skinny guy who's...
You're right.
Steve DeLevy.
I want to say Greg Van Borsum, only person with two credits in the top line of the film. So, good job, GVB.
Yeah. You know, GVB is nothing but goodness. So let's... Because here's some other...
And this is the end of the thing. The accusing dead, the wretched. I think the wretched are the two people highlighted at the end of the film.
Okay.
Our guy with no legs, I'm guessing, and our Jamaican guy.
And maybe, yeah.
I think.
Okay.
Drummers, war pups, and the accusing dead. The accusing dead have to be the ones who come up in Max's
right,
memories.
Of course. Of course.
And then the many voices of Lee
Carey. The accusing dead would be a great name for a band.
Oh, good call.
And also the wretched war pups.
The wretched.
And the many voices of Lee Perry. Now, he must have been part of the ADR, the Loop Group. I don't know.
He did a lot of stuff for the film.
Yeah.
I think that's good.
Okay, we are technically not at the end of...
We have one more minute of credits, but assume that we've gotten through, because I don't want to read all the credits to you guys.
Yeah.
I do think, I want to say as means of closure for this episode, that we've done a fine job of I think, throughout the course of these last 46 weeks, mm-hmm. giving credit where credit is due. The things we missed, I apologize if you are worked on the film and we didn't credit you properly. But I think all in
but
all, the takeaway
But if you
here,
did, and we didn't credit you,
come on.
And you'd like to talk about it on the show...
Yeah. Come on, air.
We're easy to find. You are awaited on Twitter. youareawaited@gmail.com if you need to tell us more.
Tune in next week for special episodes on the horizon, everybody.
We're making it up as we go along.
Always.
My name is Yuri Lowenthal.
My name is Travis Sintel.
And you will always be awaited.